Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber Podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we are talking data protection again, something we've covered in great detail, but this is much bigger than that. And actually, I have to say, we've had a little bit of a workshop on it ourselves in the last little while, and we really think that this is something that listeners need to hear. Is that fair to say, Martin?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I thought I was going great guns with finding a breach that was 30 million breaches a year. This is way in excess of that. Way in excess.
Yeah. And just to let listeners know, we're back on Sunday live show again. So it's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Register there. Last week was brilliant. We had Emma D'Souza. We had Tomas Ryan,
yeah.
And it went really well. So come along. It's a bit of crack. Anyway, look, enough of that. We are joined by Johnny Ryan, who's a senior fellow at ICCL, former data and technology expert, worked in the publishing as well. But also, for the purpose of this, Johnny, you were also a whistleblower to a large degree as well. And that's something I know, Martin, that's dear to your heart. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Great to be with you.
Look, we really appreciate this. This report, and I'm going to call it, it's European Enforcement Paralysis. It's just going to drop now in the next little while. Do you want to give a kind of, I suppose we always say, the elevator pitch, Johnny, of what people can expect to see in this and why they need to give a shit?
Sure. We're releasing this report to try to put a focus on something that's absolutely lacking. All of us know that there is a problem. Sorry, can I start again?
Of course, work away. I'll deal with the edits, as I said, plenty of
great,
time.
Great. We all know that there's a problem online, and we all know we're being tracked all the time in what we do on websites and on apps on our phone. What we probably don't realize is that the European legislator has set up a system that is supposed to protect us. In 2018, data protection authorities were given the power to literally, with a warrant, kick down any door of any company and to obtain evidence from anyone who they needed to. And if you were to lie to one of these people, in fact, you could be put in jail in most jurisdictions. So they have the power to investigate on our behalf and to protect us. And not only that, they can go into the biggest companies in the world, they can impose fines on them, but much more importantly, they can order them to stop using our data for things that are unlawful. Now, this report today shows that that is not happening. We are not being protected adequately. And it puts the blame, I'm afraid to say, here in Dublin, primarily on the Irish Data Protection Commission. We are blessed by having so many of the world's leading tech companies in Ireland. But that puts the responsibility on our enforcer for leading investigations into those firms. And as our new data today show, those investigations are not progressing. And that is why people are not being protected from Google, Facebook, and the rest of big tech.
It's a fairly depressing picture when you look at it, Johnny. Can you give us some idea of the scale of this?
I'm going to stop the podcast for a couple of minutes where we outline to you why it's important we keep this project going. Over 1,000 podcasts just between the Reboot Republic and the Echo Chamber. See, series like Police, which have actually helped change Gardaí policy. Converse Trans, which is trans people talking to trans people about trans issues. You know, Built Different, which is, again, people of color, young people coming in, giving their voices, and we just get out of their bloody way. We've helped launch other podcasts that are now going off. You see the two Norris signing with Acast, okay? They talked about their mentorship. No, none of that nonsense. We were just delighted to be able to help them and help build that, because collaboration is how it goes. But collaboration doesn't pay the bills. I don't want to be reading ads for Now TV. I don't want to be reading ads for saying recommending this mattress that I've no idea with. I don't want to have to do that. But we're bloody desperate at this stage, Martin, that we want to keep this thing going.
Yeah, look, the amount of work that goes into this is phenomenal. Tony puts a huge amount of work into it. And so does everybody who's doing the podcast. Rory, Caroline, everybody puts in a huge amount of work. We do it for free.
Exactly. We do it for free. Glow West has changed how sex is talked about in Ireland. That is true. Like, Caroline has now got an article every Saturday in the Irish Independent, and we started out, we're now about 80 episodes into it, and it's changed the way sex can be discussed in Ireland, and I'm very proud that my tiny little part of that, but the tortoise shack, more importantly, supported that vision from the outset. But it doesn't happen without support. It needs the people who can afford to do it to go to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. It's the price of a cup of coffee. That's what it is. It's a fancy cup of coffee, okay? It's the one that you want that has an extra shot of this and maybe a flavor or something. But for $5.50, you get a ton of extra content because we have to make it more lucrative, and that's just the way it is. We hate to say that, we'd love to see the end of capitalism. That's the ambition here. But look,
remember, the address you need, the website you need is patreon.com/tortoiseshack. It's a fairly depressing picture when you look at it, Johnny. Can you give us some idea of the scale of this?
The scale of the problem that we're confronted with is mind-boggling. I'll give you an example of one particular data breach that ICCL and I have been complaining about for several years now and providing evidence on. Every time any of us go online and visit a website or use an app that is commercial, every time you load those things, there are blank rectangles, and you'll notice there's a little moment sometimes where the rectangles are empty, where ads will appear. To fill those blank rectangles, what the websites and what the apps are doing is they are broadcasting who we are, where we are, and what we are watching and reading and listening to. Those broadcasts go out to tens or hundreds of companies every single time for each ad. And that allows parties that, you know, you've no control over to learn about your online behavior and build a picture of your life. Now, what I've described is called real-time bidding, and it's essentially the backbone of a big part of the online advertising industry. And the real-time bidding breach is particularly concerning because the data that are revealed about you in those broadcasts, every time you load a page and ads load, the data include inferences, or can include inferences, about your sexuality, your religious faith, your health conditions, and so on. So these are highly intimate things, and they allow data brokers who can receive those data to build up profiles about you and sell them on to unknown parties. Now, in case this all seems like a really abstract problem, let me make it real for you. The next time you apply for your dream job, an algorithm behind the scenes may decide to not shortlist your CV because of something about you that it learnt from one of those data brokers. You're leaking out these data all the time, and you do not know how they will be used against you. And another example is, the next time you apply for a mortgage or for insurance, who knows whether these data are in the mix? And maybe most concerning is, if I were trying to run a campaign to micro-target the people listening to this podcast, to influence them to not vote or to vote in one way or another, I would love to have these profiles that revealed the intimate things about these people and what makes them tick. And that's what this real-time bidding data breach is doing hundreds of billions of times a day. Now, that's one example of the scale of the harm and risk we're all exposed to because the enforcers that are supposed to protect us are not adequately doing their job.
Johnny, it's true, too, that they can health issues. They can know about your health issues. They can know whether you're taking care of children with health issues. This is all included in the data mix that they have illegal access to. Am I right about this?
Yes. If I visit a website and I'm reading about long COVID, or if I'm reading about cancer symptoms, the fact that I'm on that particular page is highly likely to be sent out to advertisers just as a matter of routine. There may not be any malice involved. This is just how the industry works. Those rules, though, clearly expose my health conditions to everyone who receives the data.
Johnny, just got to bring this specifically to Ireland, because Ireland has a reputation as the data protection commissioner for the EU, because we've seen in the overall size of the tech sector, the big players, they're domiciled here in terms of the EU. And, you know, if I could ask you just broadly, knowing that, you know, you yourself have brought blew the whistle on certain aspects of what was going on in terms of the data that was being collected as I think it was 2018 where you initially made your first disclosure. You know, where do we stand now as in Ireland? How do we look against our European peers who do sort of similar data protection and under the GDPR?
There's a lot of blame to go around. Clearly, we are not being protected adequately against what tech firms do with our data. That is immediately apparent to everyone. And the consent spam that we're confronted with clearly is meaningless and a nonsense and a nuisance. But I have to say, Ireland fares particularly poorly. The Irish Data Protection Commission has a unique responsibility because it is the so-called lead supervisory authority for Google, for Facebook, for Apple, for Microsoft. And that, of course, includes WhatsApp, Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube, all of the subsidiary parts of those companies too. Now, what that means is that Ireland is the lead authority for most of big tech, and no other country can intervene if our enforcer decides to assert its leadership as the supervisor of those firms. Now, what we're showing in these new data in this report is that there are 160 outstanding cases, 160 outstanding cases where Ireland is the lead authority. Europe is waiting for Ireland and the Irish Data Protection Commission to deliver what's called a draft decision that the rest of Europe can then decide how to act on. The rest of Europe can't do anything until Ireland progresses those decisions. Now, that's 160 outstanding. So far, Ireland has delivered only 4 draft decisions, at least in the 3 years since the GDPR was introduced, from May 2018 to May 2021. Ireland has delivered on 2% of all of the cross-border major cases that it has responsibility for as lead authority. Now, compare that, for example, to another country, for example, Spain. Spain doesn't have the same focus and caseload as Ireland because there aren't as many big tech firms there. But even so, the Spanish enforcer has delivered 52% of its caseload, not 2%, 52. So the Spanish are producing, if you look at raw numbers, 10 times as many draft decisions. Right? They aren't holding up their European colleagues. They're not a bottleneck.
With a smaller budget, by the way, it has to be said.
Yeah, exactly. As the report shows, the Spanish are producing more than 10 times the number of draft decisions, and they're doing so on a smaller budget. That is true.
And Ireland, as the gatekeeper, this is, we've been told that, you know, the reason Ireland's so slow or their story is underfunding. They requested 25 million, I think, in their recent request. They got 19 million. But a deeper look at those figures, Johnny, shows that it's not funding that's at issue here.
Funding may indeed be one of the problems, and I'm among those who in the past has called for larger funding for the DPC. And let me not suggest that everything is negative. The DPC has played a useful role on things like the public services card, as you know, and the DPC has played a useful role in some of the more recent developments that involved the Gardaí. However, there are clearly problems. It is the bottleneck of European enforcement. And, you know, those problems clearly go beyond how much money it has in the kitty. And I'll give you an example of why one might think that. Back in, I think, February, we at ICCL released an expose that got quite a lot of international coverage. What we showed was that in the run-up to the GDPR, the Data Protection Commission of Ireland got a budget to move from an ancient system called Lotus Notes, which is what it was then using to coordinate investigations of the world's tech companies. It was using this ancient system called Lotus Notes. It really is quite remarkable. And rightly, the DPC said, well, for us to perform our role under this new GDPR, we need to move from Lotus Notes, which sounds fair enough to me. And they got the budget to do so. What we revealed, though, earlier this year, was that now, years later, they were still using Lotus Notes. The budget had almost spiraled to €1 million. When we FOI'd them, the number of pages in the project were, 4,000 or 5,000 internally. So it had clearly spiraled into something difficult to manage. And I remember talking to someone who had worked using Lotus Notes at the DPC. And this person said, trying to run investigations into the world's leading tech companies and using Lotus Notes to do so, as we had to do, is like trying to do payroll for an international company using an abacus. Now, that issue clearly is a fundamental one of administration and was not about having too little money. Clearly, there are bigger problems. And I'll give you a summary of what they appear to be. The Justice Committee of the Oireachtas had a hearing in April. I was one of the witnesses. And at that hearing, several matters were raised. For example, there does not seem to be any clarity about what process and procedure the DPC uses when it runs an investigation. When the DPC says something has been, quote, resolved, there doesn't seem to be any clarity about what that word means. The DPC seemed to be in doubt about whether it had the legal responsibility to investigate each complaint. A whole lot of these very, fundamental things emerged at that hearing. And just before the summer, it wasn't much reported, but it was quite seismic, I think. The Justice Committee released its report, I think on the 27th of June. And that report said, the DPC needs a independent review of how it can be strengthened and reformed. And we at ICCL welcomed that because we've been pushing for that independent review for a year. It also said its processes need to be clarified, perhaps as part of that review, and the Minister for Justice needs to use her power to appoint two additional commissioners. Right now, we have one commissioner at the top of the DPC, but the Data Protection Act that sets up the modern Data Protection Commission says that there can be three, one of whom would be the chair. So it is time for the government and for the DPC to implement those recommendations. And we urgently need Ireland to stop being the bottleneck of GDPR enforcement against big tech. If we don't, I think we run the risk that Dublin and Ireland will lose that position that is starting to emerge of being a kind of a regulatory Singapore, right? A place where that type of business is conducted. We will be bypassed and sidestepped. And I'll give you an example of that. Right now, the next generation of digital legislation is being debated in Brussels and across European capitals. One of them is the Digital Markets Act. One of them is the Digital Services Act. And another is the Artificial Intelligence Regulation. These are the next generation of things that will shape the digital market in Europe and probably, to some extent globally. Some of those draft pieces of legislation envisage giving Ireland, in effect, this is their import, giving Ireland a similar role that it enjoys under the GDPR, where we become essentially the regulator of first instance for the world's big tech firms. Now, if Ireland remains the place where enforcement and supervision against big tech firms is bottlenecked, if that continues to happen, if we continue to have bad headlines in the international press, which are accurate about our performance, those proposals will not happen. And we will see our position that we enjoy under the GDPR be diminished too. And Dublin will be less relevant in the digital era.
I'd look, just to go back on. So you mentioned Spain, they're running at 52%. I know Germany running at 43% with a similar enough amount of caseload to Ireland. I mean, you know, not a lot less than Ireland and running at all, you know, to, I was going to say 10 times, no, 20 times more efficiently than Ireland in terms of the cases that they're delivering. But there's also a phrase that you used when we were building up to this, and you mentioned Ireland's place in it. Compliance theatre, Johnny. I know, Martin, you're a big user of GDPR, looking at cases, trying to take cases. We've dealt with the data protection a lot on this podcast. But the idea that EU will continue to show patience with Ireland, because the name of the report again is European Enforcement Paralysis. When you say European, the bulk of that lies in Dublin, but lies with Ireland in reality. At what point do we do two things? So here's a two-part question, which you're not supposed to do. Do we actually say we need to tackle this real-time bidding because this disinformation shouldn't be as easy to be bought and sold, and then the second side, at what point do we turn around internally and say, listen, lads, there was a phrase, John, I don't know if you remember, but when the UK were leaving the EU, the European banking license was up for the head. It was based in London, and there was thoughts of Paris was I think Paris ultimately won, but it was Paris. There was Germany, and then someone said, "Oh, we could Ireland was interested in it, but someone said it was the equivalent of giving the European nuclear thing to God forgive me for saying it, but the equivalent of giving it to Chernobyl because of our banking thing." So, at what stage do we really does the EU just say no, enough of this nonsense? It's not happening.
Okay, first on the. First, on the real-time bidding question. Real-time bidding is the biggest data breach ever recorded. The scale is hundreds of billions of these broadcasts about us all every day. So clearly, there's a problem. Now, you mentioned compliance theater. And every time you go online as a European, you're confronted by these consent spam pop-ups. Let me tell you that we actually have at ICCL a legal procedure right now in Belgium in front of the Belgian Data Protection Authority, the DPC's counterpart, because we are taking the designer of that consent spam to task and holding them to account and saying your system is itself an infringement of the GDPR. It undermines the notion of consent and it pours this thin veneer of legality. You know, someone has ticked OK, right, on a square box somewhere. It pours a thin supposed legality onto the biggest data breach ever recorded. So I think after the summer, in the next month or two, you'll see a decision out of Belgium that hopefully will allow ICCL to improve the lives of everyone across the EU. And at the same time, we have a piece of litigation that we've launched in Hamburg against the tracking industry's trade body. It's called the IAB. They often purport to represent publishers and they have members who are publishers, but they actually represent the interests of the tracking industry. We're litigating against them in Hamburg about that real-time bidding data breach. Now, that's a positive thing, but it should not be necessary for ICCL to do so. It was the job of the enforcers to do that. They should have solved this problem. We gave them the evidence several years ago. The GDPR seems to people to be very complicated, including the recitals. It's 90,000 words, but actually sometimes you can judge something on its cover. It's called the General Data Protection Regulation. If the data are not protected, you've infringed the regulation. Essentially, and the ideas go back to the 70s, but one of the key ideas is don't have a data breach. You're not allowed to broadcast personal data about people without knowing where it's going to end up. Now, that's a long answer to your short question about real-time bidding. Let me try and give you a short answer to when will Europe get vexed. I said at the outset that there was enough blame to go around. Yes, the DPC has not performed its task adequately. And that, I think, our numbers show in very stark relief in a way that has not been seen up until now. Second, though, the Irish government has not necessarily taken a direct interest in the GDPR being enforced. The DPC is independent, but, you know, there are things like mood music, and the provision of resources over the last decade and a half showed that data protection was not a particular concern of government. The DPC for a long time has been underfunded, that is true. But third, it is the European Commission's duty to see that European law is applied. And when European law is not applied, the European Commission is supposed to examine that, and if necessary, it can take a country to the European Court of Justice. Now, the European Commission has not even hinted at doing that with respect to Ireland or pretty much anyone else that hasn't properly applied the GDPR. So there's plenty of blame to go around. And you asked, when will Europe get vexed enough? In a funny sense, actually, Brussels and the European Commission needs to get vexed at itself. It has allowed itself to be distracted by this next generation of European law. But there's a bigger picture that it has forgotten. And I'll tell you what that is. Europe used to matter. It used to be the place. If Europe decided something was going to happen to your country, that was probably what was going to happen to your country. Now, I'm going back 100 years, and I'm not saying that that was a positive, but it is a fact that that was the case. That is no longer the case. Europe no longer wields anything like the influence over world affairs that it once did. But one area where Europe is preeminent, or might potentially be, is in regulation. And specifically, it's in the regulation of the digital realm and the private realm. And those things are going to shape the future of the economy in a very significant way. When the GDPR was introduced in 2016, first, before it was applied, there was a 2-year grace period. When it was introduced, it was hyped by all of Europe, the member states, the European Commission, the Parliament, everybody. It was hyped as the best thing since bread was sliced. This was one of the key new jewels in Europe's fading crown. And if Europe allows the GDPR to lose credibility, Europe's influence will wane. That's a real problem. And
Johnny, I want to come in because on the report, it shows that, and we all know this from the corporate world, we all know it from the general world, that in the build-up, the run-up to GDPR becoming the law, that, you know, companies were emailing everybody saying, we need you to come on board with this. Here's a new thing we need you to do. Here's, you know, we've previously communicated with you in this way. We need to change that. Spending on data protection and in compliance, DPOs, data protection officers, and it all went up. It all went up across the board. But the report shows that it's now fizzled out. It's now gone into decline. It's not below where it was when GDPR started, but the trend is not good, Johnny. And that shows that, you know, as the eyes of the world move on, so too does the corporate spending on it.
Yeah. Now, what we're showing in the report is the budgets of national enforcers. So we went and surveyed the budgets of every single enforcer across the EU. And, you know, that was complicated because in Germany, there are 17 that face the private sector. So more than just the member states. And when you look at all of their budgets, you see that their budgets went up a little bit before the GDPR, and the budgets continue to increase after the GDPR, but the rate of increase is going down. So there's a kind of a declining investment in these enforcers at a time when actually it should be accelerating. But you raise something else, which is the pantomime, the circus about enforcement. Yes, there was a whole lot of heat and noise when the GDPR was introduced, but I have been a data protection officer inside a corporation. Unusually, my company that I worked for, Brave, a browser, was almost solely focused on privacy. So we actually took our responsibilities very seriously. But actually, I think for most companies, it was largely theatrical. And for those even for whom it wasn't theatrical, they did not necessarily have the necessary guidance. Now, when I say guidance, I don't mean documents that are sent by enforcers. I mean No one dinged Google and Facebook and Amazon and any of the other big players in the market for, I would suggest, very apparent infringements. So the signals from enforcers were not sent. And, you know, when you talk to data protection officers inside any company who know what they're at, what they will tell you is they wish the enforcers actually did some enforcement against the big players, some meaningful enforcement now, because that would signal internally in a way that would allow the data protection officer to politically have some clout. They had clout in 2018 when the regulation was introduced. Then it turned out no one was serious about the regulation. I'm sorry, Google has just decided to participate in the conversation. Did you hear that? That was my phone answering a question I didn't ask.
But isn't it true too, particularly where our government is concerned, Johnny, that that also holds true. There was a lot of big talk about GDPR, but when it came to the crunch, nobody was really interested. And there's been a bit of a rollback against GDPR, both through media and government.
We've had a minister involved with the, and we've covered this extensively on the podcast. We've had Roderick O'Gorman involved with the Mother and Baby Home Commission's report, telling us that it wasn't subject to the GDPR, when it clearly was. And he had to, but we lost months, and in those months, people who were re-traumatized and put through this rigmarole of being told that their data will be then deleted, it will disappear, Martin, and because he said we're not subject to it, and then he went off and got new advice and said, well, turns out that was old advice, kind of thing, and sure, look, we'll retrieve the data. But I mean, that is negligence, and that just shows the state itself, as you put it, Martin, was not really on board with this at all when it didn't suit them.
Yeah, it was the performance thing again. It was performance.
Now, in fairness to the Data Protection Commission, they have been far more proactive, it seems to me, in dealing with the public sector than the private. You can see some results from their work there. But in thinking about state responses, something remarkable has happened in the last fortnight. The United Kingdom, now that it has left the EU, is starting to make noise, very public noise, about consent spam. And these consent messages are being presented by the United Kingdom as the new bendy banana. Look at this crazy European red tape. Isn't it a nuisance? Let's blame Brussels. However, I blew the whistle to the UK's enforcer back in 2017, I think, about real-time bidding. And I and the Open Rights Group in the UK we're on the ICO, that's the equivalent of the Data Protection Commission. We're on the ICO's case in the UK about consent. And when they were a European Union member, they could have acted against that consent spam, and they didn't. So when you have a looseness, as we now have, about the GDPR, it can become something of a football. Had we seen robust enforcement, everyone would know where they stand. But now we have a whole lot of hot air that has been allowed to occupy a bigger and bigger space. What we're doing now with this report, we're taking hot air out of the room. We're making it very clear in crystal clear data which member states are the biggest bottlenecks of enforcement against big tech. Who is holding them to account, and who is protecting us, and who is not?
Can I just, want to recap this for people. I think it's important. When you're talking about real-time bidding, what we have is that there is a database or multiple databases of information about each individual. And every time you go on a website, every time you log on to the internet, more data is added to that profile. And the data can include just sexuality, your ethnicity, any health issues that you may have.
Political beliefs. What's in your bank account?
What's in your bank account? Pretty much a profile of you as a person.
I gotta say surveillance capitalism. Sorry, Martin.
Go ahead. Yeah. No, you're 100% right. It is surveillance capitalism. But it's important that every single time you look at a website, this profile is added to. Mm. Every single time. So this is a huge snowball that's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And yet there is no enforcement on the data protection side to stop this snowball. And what Johnny is doing is trying to stop this snowball, this illegal snowball, which has become so big that there's entire industries built around it. Mm. Do you think you're going to get anywhere with this, Johnny?
Yes. Now, I spent several years trusting that the enforcers were going to do their job. Now we at ICCL are boldly going where enforcers have failed to, and we're going to court. The beauty of the General Data Protection Commission is, just totally muddled that, the General Data Protection. The beauty of the GDPR is that it gives you the right to complain to an enforcer, yes, but at the same time and in parallel, you have the right to go to court. And you have a third right. You can take the enforcer to court. So we're probably going to be doing all three. We're already doing two of them in several member states. You'll see more and more litigation coming out of the ICCL. Our litigation in Hamburg targets Google, Facebook, Amazon, Microsoft, everyone in that industry by targeting the standard that they all use. It'll take a while for that litigation to go through, but it is incontrovertible that this broadcast is happening, and it is immediately clear that it infringes data protection law. There isn't much argument there. The process that is the most frustrating is the one I have in Ireland. Several years ago, I filed a complaint with the Irish Data Protection Commission about Google's role in that online advertising system, real-time bidding. And in September last year, we at ICCL wrote to the Minister for Justice and to the Data Protection Commission. And we said, it's now over 2 years since we gave you this evidence. In those 2 years, the problem has got worse. And on top of that, here is evidence that Irish people with AIDS and Irish people who have suffered sexual abuse, for example, here is evidence that they have been profiled illegally using data that leaked out of this system. What are you going to do about it? Now, it took 11 months for the Data Protection Commission to act on the complaint I sent them in September 2018. What was that action? The action was to announce that they were going to launch a statutory inquiry. That sounds very positive, but 11 months is a long time to let something wait around before you decide to launch an investigation. Now, over 3 years later, after that inquiry, the DPC has not yet even produced a statement of issues paper, which is the paper it uses to define what it actually plans to investigate. So we do not know today whether the Data Protection Commission has actually done a single thing of substance to end the biggest data breach ever recorded. And our evidence on that data breach, you know, it has appeared in my testimony at the US Senate. It has appeared in my testimony here in Dublin. It's been on the front page of the Financial Times. It's been reported on in The Economist, The New York Times. This is not a small issue.
It's been commented by the founders of Page and Brin of Google themselves, where they've said basically, and they're, I'm paraphrasing here, but, you know, get out of our way, regulators. We'll fix it as we go along. Yes, we'll make mistakes, but we move so quickly that we'll have it sorted before you even realize there's a problem. And they've said that repeatedly.
About real-time bidding, if they
about,
did.
About how they've collected data, how they've been using it, what they've been doing with it, and whether, you know, and all of these things, whenever they've been questioned, it's Page and Brin they've said these things in conferences and talked about it and said, basically, look, we do it ourselves. We're so far ahead of where you are, we're self-regulating.
Now, that's a general thing about tech, right? Whereas I was talking about just real-time bidding. That it was an issue that was so high profile and still is, that it didn't just slip under the DPC's desk. How have they not acted on it? That is something I'm very confused about. But on your broader point, Tony, about tech's attitude, Until recently, until a year ago, I was working for a San Francisco-based tech firm. The guy I was working for, Brendan Eich, is the inventor of JavaScript. So I was in that world. And this is not a comment about that company, about Brave, which was, I think, separate to the others. But there is a general sense in that part of the United States and elsewhere that industry knows best. It'll all trickle in the right direction. Here in Europe, we take a different approach to fundamental rights, at least these particular fundamental rights. And let me give you a few examples of why that might be. There's a historical story about data protection that I have never checked to see if it's accurate because it's so appalling. But I should do that actually before I mention it. I'll mention it anyway. So this is potentially apocryphal, hopefully apocryphal. In the 1870s, I think, when in Paris one night, the Huguenots, a religious sect, were slaughtered in their beds. A very large number of that sect were just murdered one night in their beds. Apparently, the murderers who came and found them and killed them as they slept, apparently, they used the Paris tax roll to find out where the Huguenots were. Now, that gives you a sense of the importance of data protection. And in fact, there's a principle from the 70s in data protection law called purpose limitation. If you're going to collect someone's data for the tax roll, it's not lawful to use it for some other reason. Now, think about that the next time you sign up for a Google account.
It has to be for specific.
They have an internal free-for-all. But let me now make that example more current. There was a remarkable story that came out in the last fortnight that when the US withdrew from Afghanistan, they left behind their eye scanners, their biometric scanners, which they were using to be able to identify people and know by scanning your eye exactly who you are. And when those devices fell into the hands of the Taliban essentially gained control over a US database of sympathizers, informants, people who'd worked with them. It's so similar to that Huguenot example of a century and a half ago that it is chilling. So these ideas of data protection law are very intimate to the idea of you as a human having particular rights and of the need for people who are going to use data about you to be really responsible with how they use those data, because the risks are unforeseeable. You cannot guess what's going to be done with the data. But we, Tony, Martin, Johnny, we're not supposed to be walking around wearing tinfoil hats, right? We're not supposed to be covering our phone's camera with blue tack or whatever, because the law, the legislator provided in 2016 for us to be protected by almost all powerful supervisory authorities. They should be doing their jobs protecting us, and they aren't. So what we have now is a data free-for-all, where we're clicking consent messages every time we switch on our devices that we know mean nothing. No one is being punished for that. The people who work at these enforcement agencies are clicking the same messages and they're doing nothing about it. And when they finally launch an investigation, we then have to wait years before they even decide what it is they intend to investigate. This is unsustainable. It will, I fear, tyrannize us as citizens. It exposes us to risks that really are very worrying, but as employees too, and as consumers. But even in the market, it means that you can have big tech firms which benefit from having an internal data free-for-all because they're almost totally unregulated in that respect. No major enforcement there. You're not going to have new innovative entrants in the market. And we're going to see more and more political micro-targeting. This is looking like dystopia, and we're slipping into it.
And I think that's a good place to wrap this, Johnny.
And I think it's a terrible place to wrap this.
Well, I think it's the accurate place to wrap this. I think would be a better
accurate and terrible place to end our conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. No, no, there are huge issues at stake in all of this. Massive human rights issues at stake, as we've seen in Afghanistan. This data can be used, and Ireland is one of the leading countries for spuriously collecting data in the public sector, but we do need to control it in the private sector. Johnny Ryan, thanks very much for coming on and having this chat with us. It's informative, it's depressing, and as we said, it's probably one of the most important conversations we could have.
Remember, listeners, sorry, Johnny, the listeners, the report is available at iccl.ie. You'll find the details there. We were delighted to be able to go through it just in advance of its release. So we would recommend you check it out, because there's a lot of work going on there. And as I said, it matters that we actually pay much more attention to this right now. Yeah, Johnny Ryan, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us. We will talk to you folks very, very soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.